It's Kay.
It's Carrington.
Hey, it is Kay. And hey, you can hear me and everything?
I can hear you and everything.
Oh, well yeah. Done.
Like I said before, in the 12 times we tried this before, I ordered a new computer, and the old computer seems to know it.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory.
I am glad for the trouble, because now I see you on a different angle. I'm looking at a different wall, and You've got really cool paintings or things behind you.
Oh, yes, I do.
What the heck, man? I never get to see these normally. This is so cool.
Let's see.
I hope you have trouble every time we podcast.
Thank you. This is a triptych of original Atari home computer game posters, which took me a lot of time to find. Centipede, Caverns of Mars, and Pac-Man.
I don't think I know Caverns of Mars.
Caverns of Pac-Man. Mars. Sure.
So I got that going for me.
And the thing about these posters is they all say Atari home computers.
One of them looks like it's signed.
Not
this Caverns one.
No, that's just how it. That's the of.
Oh, that's the of. Oh,
so Caverns of Mars came out in 1979, and it was the killer app.
This isn't an arcade game.
It became an I think it became an arcade game, but it started off in the Atari home computers, and it became a killer app that sold a lot of computers. It started off it started off as an Atari program exchange game, which was just like a user written game, right? That was sold through a catalog, and the Atari gave like a generous 10% of like royalty, and it sold so well
that Atari regretted it.
That Atari like upgraded it to be like an official Atari title, like on cartridge, you know.
Ooh.
They didn't port it. I was thinking of Star Raiders. So it was just a good kind of go down the caverns and shoot at things and don't crash into
you
the sign.
Made a game like this.
I did. I made a game
at
on
Kansas
the Apple
Fest.
II called Kansas Fest called Caverns of K-Fest. Right.
Now I understand the name of that game. Okay.
So, and then there's this game called Pac-Man where
you're a yellow
pizza that tries to eat little dots.
Oh, okay. As pizzas do. So those are original things from like back in the day, original posters?
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah. Fancy collector boy.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, I appreciate the backdrop.
It's good. I'm glad that you enjoy the new angle from the laptop, and I'm glad that I can actually hear you and not hear myself too much. Like
the whole new K experience. Is your experience currently being recorded?
Yes.
Double check just in case.
No, it's being recorded. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, things are a little different because I'm looking at a different direction. My email's over here, but you want to talk
about? When in doubt, face the mic.
That's right. Do you want to talk about some email we've gotten from our
listeners? Let's do a podcast. That's now that good. You can hear me and I can hear you. Yeah. Let's cast. We got a bunch of email. We got a bunch. We got a really short one. I'll start with this. One of the shortest emails we receive in a while. Mike G wrote from California. Please play Curses, the most in-depth text adventure game ever. Love the show. Can't wait to gobble up more. Way to make a point and skedaddle. Mm-hmm. Nice, Mike.
Way to get your email read on the podcast.
Keeping it short.
The rest of the ones Robert, we have to read will be much longer.
Robert Korn wrote in. Rob said, regarding our last episode about your game, Dorm, he said, for the first time in my listening history with Eaten by a Crew, I stopped at the spoiler fence and immediately played the game Dorm by Carrington Vanson. Never heard of him.
Well done. The text was like an old friend, full of dry and wet humor. very old school, classic Infocom style funny stuff. Incorporating the Wishbringer stone into the game was brilliant. The dictionary that, I don't know if that's a spoiler or not, but that was a great addition. And your InvisiClues were clearly an homage to the 80s. I had a great time playing this, even though the audio was in Carrington's voice the whole time. Is there a K setting?
There should be.
Yeah. Speaking of that, one of the, I told you, I'm leaving tomorrow for Florida, and then on Sunday we'll be going on the Joco cruise, the Jonathan Colton cruise, which
you do frequently, right?
I do.
You've
frequently
done every year for a while.
I didn't do it last year because of COVID, but COVID solved now, so now
it is. that news hadn't made it to Canada yet. Nice, congratulations.
I'm getting on an airplane and flying to Florida and going on a cruise ship, and just going to try my hardest not to catch anything.
If I got an airplane and I flew to Florida, it would just be to picket things.
I know, right?
I'm just going down to do a protesting tour.
I know. I kind of made a promise to myself not to go to certain states that don't allow full reproductive
human rights.
Human rights, yeah. But I bought this ticket before that happened. And you're probably
not spending a lot of money in
Florida. It's just a hotel and get out. Anyway, Florida. Anyway, so I'm going on this cruise, which is like it's a con on a ship, and it lasts a week, and you hear some great music, and people play games. There's an arcade on board, and people play a lot of board games and tabletop games, and it's very, very, very nerdy. Anyway, there's a talk going on twice there called Let's Make a Text Adventure.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, and it's like an hour and a half or something, and they're just like, you can bring in Form 7 on your computer if you don't, and show up, and we're going to make a text adventure together. So,
Are you leading the thing?
No, I just saw it. I'm not leading anything this time. I'm just going to show up, and I figure I'll go to that talk. I've already installed Inform 7 on my laptop here, and I brought a whole bunch of Eaten by a Grue postcards to leave out, hand out, either get listeners or just, you know, maybe we'll, or whatever, people will find out about the show. So that will be my, I don't know how I got here, but, oh, so that's how you will get a game in Kay's voice, because I'll make one on the cruise ship.
And then we'll review it.
Right.
Revenge. You've got to call it revenge.
Love it. Okay. Read some more email.
Let's see what I got. Joel wrote, Noble Adventure Sommeliers. First, let me get this out of the way. My relief and joy that you are still podcasting together, and even in the same vein as before. I admit I was a bit worried, and I really enjoyed the last episode. Thank you again. Regarding Hadean Lands, as you know, I loved it, but I also agree with your criticisms of it. It's an amazing technical thing, but also a bit of an extreme expression of Zarf's tendencies as an artist. One last thing about it, I don't think anyone discussed yet, is the reset mechanic is not merely a convenience. It's an integral part of solving the game. And in fact, there were a group of people on forums trying to optimize the number of resets you could finish in, analyzing the game like speedrunners, probing for inconsistencies or bugs and puzzles, and Zarf was interestingly silent on whether or not certain things were intentional, writing scripts and so on, and I thought that was kind of lovely. Also, there were multiple endings, but the differences were quite small and their meanings unclear, and we still don't know for certain that all of them have been found. Again, all very Zarfy. Anyway, let's never talk about that game again. I've just downloaded Creatures Such as We, and I'm going in blind. Already, I am multiply grateful for you for getting me to play through things I never would have ordinarily gone near. And on the first page of this game is certainly in that category. I'm looking forward to it. A romance sim, how very exotic. It says, P.S. Is there a way to know what's on your current spreadsheet of games you choose from? I haven't played a huge number of adventures compared to a lot of people, and although I've been playing for a long time in years, I'm non-seen, as it were, and I'm really curious to see. That's a good question. Is this spreadsheet a publicly available thing?
I am happy, I think, to share our spreadsheet. It's, if somebody wants to see it, I will put a link in the show notes. It's here it is, the Eaten by a Grue Game Randomizer. It's just a big list of games, and 121 right now, and it's just kind of our possible things that we'll play in the future.
So many games.
So many. I will put a... You don't get to edit it. You just get to...
get to just view.
Yeah, view. Not even get to comment. You just get to edit. All comments could be fun, actually.
Comments could be a lot of fun. Edits could be fun. We should have okay, everything's gone except one game.
All right. I'm putting a commenter. I'm trusting all y'all. Oh, this is...
It's best. Go wreck the place. Yeah. Love it.
No. All right. I'm putting...
The punk in me says destroy. Destroy all things.
A comment link in... So the Eaten by a Gru, all right, it's there. It'll be there. You're welcome to look at the Eaten by a Gru game randomizer.
By look at, we mean, you know, destroy.
Okay, great. That'll be there because you asked so nicely.
Aw.
Aw. Were you done reading that email?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, there's more.
Read another one, because I'm lost
okay,
now.
Okay, I shall read another one. We got an interesting one from Bob, and I've got comments about this. He wrote about OpenAI GPT. So he said, OpenAI GPT chat. Mm-hmm. Me, Bob, describe the best 9 puzzles of the Infocom game Starcross. OpenAI. Starcross is a science fiction text adventure game developed by Infocom in 1982. It is set in the distant future and follows the story of a starship pilot who is sent to investigate a mysterious alien artifact. The game is known for its challenging puzzles and has a reputation for being one of the more difficult games in the Infocom library. Here are 9 of the best puzzles from the game. And then it lists 9 of the puzzles and describes them without any spoilers. It says, first puzzle, the player must repair the ship's computer by repairing the damaged circuits and connecting them in the correct order. It goes to all 9 puzzles. And then down at the bottom here, me, that is Bob, what is the solution to the 6th puzzle? It says, in the 6th puzzle of the Infocom game Starcross, the player must use the ship's robots to repair the ship's engines and get them running again. Here is one way to solve that puzzle. Then he gives a bunch of steps. So that's really interesting. Bob also writes to say the Starcross was the first Infocom adventure he ever solved on a C64 without any help.
Wow.
You're getting help now, aren't you, Bob? Mm-hmm. Now everyone can solve it by just asking OpenAI. Love the podcast. You guys rock. That's really interesting.
That is interesting. I read his email when it came in, and I couldn't remember, honestly, I have no idea if what chat AI bought was accurate or not. You know, I don't remember enough about the puzzles. So...
For the most part, they just make stuff up. Like, check your sources. But it's interesting to see that kind of thing, like using a chatbot as a search engine in a sense. Hey, tell me about this, or give me some info. And of course, it's just ripping off sources all over the place. And
sure.
And who knows what they're in. No, not IFDB. What's the forum that people talk? Intfiction. So intfiction.org, which is like the big online forum where people meet and gather and talk about interactive fiction, writing it, playing it, getting help, doing competitions, all that kind of stuff. If you're a listener to the podcast, you probably should be on intfiction.org. It is super fun. One of my favorite places on the internet to hang out. There was a discussion there by people who make games saying, could you use something like this as a way to test your game? Because we talked about last episode or the episode before, whatever, like playing a game, or you used to make a game, right? You used chat
right to make a very bad game for you. Yeah.
Yeah. But you can also use it to play a game. Like, you could open up a game, because games are all available online, and then have it enter the commands. And so people are playing that on the forum and just having it respond and play a game, like just go in and just play the game. And of course, well, I got to give it a nudge and saying, could you use something like this to test a game, like throw the chat at it and see what it does? And for the most part, people are finding it just goes completely off the rails and just will try the same thing over and over and over again. And
like me, I do the same thing.
Well, actually, unlike humans, we found when people approach a text adventure, in general, when something doesn't work, we try other things or we go broader. And these chat things seem to just get more and more specific. So it'll say, like, push the case. And let's say the case can't be pushed. It'll say, you know, you can't push it. It'll say, like, no, push the wooden case. Push it harder. Push it strong. And it'll just get fixated on, I want to do this. And it will immediately play hunt the verb. There must be a way to do it. I won't accept that it can't be done. And so it just gets stuck, just trying more and more specific ways to do something that can't be done.
Yeah.
So I found that interesting. I found the whole topic very interesting. So.
Nice. Yeah, I think eventually, these things are going to be able to make
podcasts.
Games. Make podcasts, make games. Oh, my friend Leo sent a demonstration to a mailing list we're on. He makes podcasts, and he used one of the, I don't know what specific thing he used, but it's a thing that can imitate your own voice. You train it, and then it can.
Wow.
And he did two versions. One was him actually reading a paragraph, and the other one was the voice generator reading the paragraph. And the voice generator, it sounded so much like Leo. I mean, it was just like amazingly. And Leo, the real one, had more like expression. Leo would be like, and why did that happen? You know, the voice one was just like, and why did that happen? You know, it was more natural.
But it still sounded like him saying.
But it absolutely sounded like him. It was wild. Absolutely.
The internet is full of phonies.
Yeah.
Just like.
So.
Don't trust any of it, and don't vote for any of it. It's all lies. From here on out, kids, it's all lies.
Yeah. I use a program called, sometimes I use to edit podcasts, a program, interviews, a program called Descript. And it's a very
I've used that.
I like it a lot. And it has one of those voice generators, and it has, for a while, I've never used it. I've never needed it. So I haven't tested it. But once I heard Leo's thing, I'm just like, holy moly. So let me see if I can.
You're thinking, you don't need me. You just need to train up one of these things.
Oh,
and then you can kick me to the curb and do this podcast without me.
Oh, no. Let's see.
But could one of those things speak as quickly as I can? Can they keep up with Carrington?
He used beta.11labs.io. That's ELEVEN labs.io was the voice thing.
That's a lot of labs.
Prime voice. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the first 10 labs exploded, you know.
So. You have enough dogs, you can train them to do anything.
Do you remember that there was a movie called The Doberman Gang in the 70s? Did you ever see that?
Oh, I thought I'd seen all the movies. What's The Doberman Gang?
It was. I remember seeing this on TV. It was about a group of... This is based on my remembering of a movie I saw, you know, when I was 11.
Sure.
But this was about a group of criminals who trained a group of dogs, Dobermans, to rob a bank.
And like with the masks?
Well, they would just like go in there and like have a sign that says like, you know, carrying the bags, and like have a piece of paper that says, give me all your money or whatever. And you know, they were trained to like, whatever, just attack people if they didn't give them the money. And that way the humans felt like they could rob a bank without getting...
Because they won't get caught, because only the dogs will get caught.
Right, they couldn't get caught, right. And I think it was called the Doberman.
I'm sure that ended well for them. They got away with it.
I don't actually remember how it ended. Let's see, 1972 film about a talented animal trainer who prepares a pack of six Doberman Pinschers to commit a bank robbery at the behest of a ruthless heist planner. Yeah, we should watch that and talk about that in the future.
Definitely, 100%.
Let's see, is it on streaming? Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember it being a good movie, but it was, you know, it was a movie.
I like not good movies.
Yeah, it's on. Yeah, it's available on streaming for $3 everywhere.
I like it.
Trained to commit the most incredible caper ever conceived. Yeah, we should watch that.
Excellent.
My lovely wife and I watch a movie every year for Valentine's Day. We try to watch
the same movie.
No, we watch. Every Valentine's Day, we try to see the worst movie possible.
Ah, okay.
This started in 1993 when we happened to go to a theater, you know, and to see a movie, and it was Addams Family Values.
And it
was terrible. And then we decided, well, that should be our Valentine's Day tradition. In 1994, we saw Blank Check, which was... anyway, so that's continued. And this year... So the rules have changed for this.
Rules?
Well, the first it was like
all best Valentine's Day traditions have rules.
It had to be the worst movie in the theater.
Okay,
because this was the early 90s and before.
But then you won't necessarily have a terrible movie playing in cinemas.
Right. And then exactly. But we did the worst that we could, and then that lasted a few years, and then we had a kid, and going to a theater with a baby is impossible. So then.
Or unpopular anyway.
Then we'd actually go into the the video store. There used to be these stores where you could rent videos. They were called video stores.
That sounds fun.
And we'd say, like, what's the worst movie you have? And, you know, they were very helpful. And now they're streaming. Anyway, so this year we saw How High, which was a movie about college students who smoke the cremains of their friend, and the friend helps them get A's on all their tests by telling them all the answers. So there's a, like, marijuana, you know, pot smoking hippie guys, and they start smoking a dead friend to get the answers, but then eventually they run out of the cremains to smoke, and so what happens? It's a terrible, terrible movie.
Oh.
Well, I mean, that's the whole point. I mean, really. So that's our Valentine's Day tradition. I don't know how I got on this tangent, except you mentioned movies.
And while you think it's the worst movie, yeah, you know, there's a sequel. And all reviews say the sequel's worse. And I think there's actually a third film in the series in development. It goes How High, then How High 2. And I think there's going to be like a Too High or something like that.
You making
like,
this up?
So,
oh, it's
no.
Good. Oh, no.
I like bad movies, dude. Oh, I know my bad movies.
How High. Oh, look at that.
So I haven't actually seen How High 2, though.
But have you seen
How next
High,
year?
Have you seen How High 1?
I have seen How High
1. Oh, I just explained the whole movie to you, and you...
That's good. But you were also explaining to the listeners. There, yeah, it's not just us. There's this silent third person who sits beside us while we hang out, and that's the listener.
How did you feel about the movie How High?
It's terrible. Like, it's terrible. And the thing is, I actually like drug movies like that, Friday and stuff. And like, as a person who doesn't do any drugs, I actually like dumb comedies. I like stuff like that. And so it's a genre that has movies I enjoy.
Yeah.
But, you know, Method Man shouldn't act is what I'm saying. Red Man and Method Man are just like, they're just not... Waste of Fred Willard. It was. I'm not a fan. And that's an old film too. Wasn't that like? That's a forever ago. It seems. It's got to be like
2001. Yeah.
2001. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah. Method Man and Red Man. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. That was something they put on film.
Yep.
Do you want to talk about games?
Yeah, no more email.
Do you have any more email? I thought if you have more, go for it.
We got tons.
Let's catch up.
We should do at least this one. Friend of the show, Karen Hales, wrote in. We got to read when she writes in.
Yeah, sure.
Hi, Kay and Carrington.
Hi,
I was
Karen.
Glad to see the new episode pop up. Here are two quick responses plus one additional point of interest. One, a few years ago, I started Hadean Lands and likewise didn't get far. I appreciate the straightforward way you all modeled on the podcast the decision to stop trying and move on. Two, I would be totally willing to try out the game that you made. Karen, I don't know about that. And then she goes on to say, in September, the New Yorker had a fun article on choose your own adventure books. I thought for sure they would mention IF, but here's the transition the author made. In the 1990s, the Choose series began to decline, in large part because of the increasing popularity of video and computer games. In the early 80s, the Choose series offered a novel experience, a chance to control the narrative that you were inside of. But by the mid-90s, this experience had become less novel, and it felt more seductive in digital media, where the worlds were more visually immersive.
And also, I mean, there was like this one guy doing it. I think his name was Edward Packard. He was like doing these books, and then they like we need more of these books. And they hired 50 authors, and you know,
right? So there you go, put them all out. Since Nintendo released its first handheld Game Boy in 1989, the King's Quest computer games appeared in the 1980s and 90s. The iconic computer game Myst came out in 1993 with lush graphics and nuanced storyline in the same year as its aesthetic opposite, the popular first person shooter game Doom. And then Karen says, I thought briefly about writing in a note in the obvious gap, like there's this thing called interactive fiction. It was kind of a big deal, but I read it too late for their typical letter cycle, around 6 weeks post article. In any case, I thought you might enjoy reading the piece, and I did. It's remarkable that they don't even mention, doesn't even like give any type to interactive fiction, but it's still actually a really interesting article if you're interested in choose your own adventure books and that kind of stuff. So it's called The Enduring Allure of Choose Your Own Adventure Books, and we'll have a link in the show notes. I actually really like the article. So
awesome. I don't think I saw this message from Karen until just now. I just somehow missed it. Or it's... Speaking of enduring allure, I'd like to know about any feedback you got from other people about Dorm since you released it.
Oh, tons. And very, very nice and kind and positive and no hate mail, which is like the internet is so nice to me. And I know it's because of my demographic. And it's just like I live in this little bubble of people being nice to me on the internet. But incredibly nice feedback. My favorite bit of feedback was somebody reviewed it on IFDB, which is like the big site that links to all the interactive fiction stuff. And a really, really kind review, like an overly kind, very nice of the person review. They gave it 4 stars and like a bunch of very complimentary stuff, which again is probably overly kind. And the criticisms I thought were really, really good, right on the nose. I thought, yes, 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 this is excellent. I wish this person was a beta tester. I would have changed the game if they would have just given me this feedback.
For instance,
I am going to be changing the game. Like the version that's online right now is, I think, version 2 or whatever, which is, again, it was just like bug fixes and stuff. And I've been working on a version 3, not really changing the game significantly, just as people are sending in small bugs, I've been collecting them and making a slightly polished version to put out. But in the review, the person said, like, one of the things they knocked the game for, and justifiably knocked it, was there's 2 puzzles in which you solve the puzzle you have to do the correct thing more than once.
I noticed that, and I was just like, why did Carrington do this? Carrington hates
this. I hate that. Yeah. I hate that in games. And I was like, I didn't put that in my... I totally did put that in my game. Why did I put that in the game? One of them in particular, I know... They didn't mention in the review, but I know what they must be thinking of. There's a gamer in the game, because the game's super meta, and you have to try to figure out what is the right game to play with the gamer, and I make you try to do it 3 times. And I don't know why. And if you play the right game, you get like feedback that kind of gives you a hint you're on the right path. But what was I think? I hate that in game. I remember when we played Ballyhoo, mm-hmm. I knocked the game because in that there's this, you have to find a clue. And I actually really like that game. I think it's a terrific game. I liked it more than you. I recommend people play it. I think people should play this first Infocom game. Not Ballyhoo. Moon Mist. That's the game I'm thinking. Moon Mist. Okay. I really like Moon Mist. Ballyhoo we both loved. In Moon Mist, to be non-spoilery, you have to find a thing as one of the clues. It's a murder mystery game. And you have to look in a place. And so I'm going to make up a place so it's not spoilery. A cupboard. Not a cupboard in the game, but whatever. And you look in the cupboard and it says you see nothing. You have to look again. Look in the cupboard a second time. It's like, oh, now that you're looking again, you spot this thing that you need. And I hate it. I hate it then. I hate it now. Why would you make somebody do something twice? And then I did it in my own game. I don't know, man. I have no idea what I was thinking. So the next version of the game will change that. So you only have to do it once. Because I don't know, man. You get caught up in making a game and you think something is a good idea. That's a terrible idea.
One puzzle... required some knowledge of Mac versus Apple II, and I can't think of what puzzle that is.
I know what it is. You encounter the pirate of Silicon Valley, because I thought that was really funny. So there's a pirate, and it's a Mac person, and it's sort of, it's the pirate of Silicon Valley, which that's, to me, that's really funny. The game, I don't know, I find my stuff funny. And so to get past the pirate of Silicon Valley, he's asking you to demonstrate something about the Apple II that is significantly more amazing than a vintage Mac, because it's like an Apple II game. And so I think it's that. Like somebody, like, how would I know? I tried to put stuff in the game, like both in the feelies and the game itself, that really shout about that. So I don't know. But if you don't see it, you don't see it. It is what it is.
You said someone made a Commodore version of the game?
A few different versions. Somebody's made a Commodore 64 version. Somebody's made an Atari version.
Really? I did not know this.
Somebody's made a BBC Micro version. Commodore 64, BBC Micro, I think Sinclair now, and somebody else has made an Atari version, but I haven't looked at it yet. The thing is, to make a version of the game, you don't have to like remake the game. Then the cool thing about Infocom is like how it works is you make your Z3 file, and then that just sits on a disk or disk image with the Infocom interpreter, and you put those two on a disc and you've got a game. And so to make a game, if you like, if you wanted to play one for, I don't know, Sam Coupe or whatever, you just have to make a disk image and combine the Z3 file from the game you're interested in, my game or anybody's game or whatever, with the Infocom interpreter, and now you've got a retro version of the game. That's one of the cool things about Punian Forum. So people are just knocking out versions for other platforms, which I think is totally awesome and cool.
Nice. Neat. Well, I'm glad people are playing your game and enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been super awesome. Like, I'm happy with the game, but it's also just lovely when people, you know, say nice things and enjoy something I put some time in. So I've been really flattered.
Nice. Yep. Any more mails?
We got lots. Justin, he wrote in to say, I've now caught up on all the episodes. It's been a great ride. Thanks. I see you are now selecting games from a spreadsheet and random number generator, but are sometimes getting frustrated at the shorter length of these modern games. The next time you want to play a game with a bit more meat on the bones, I say definitely give a Magnetic Scrolls game a go. I've been replaying some of them over at the Magnetic Scrolls Memorial site, and the one I'm highly recommending that you start with is Fish. With an exclamation point, Fish. I think you will definitely get a laugh out of it. It's a great website with all the relevant documentation, etc., that it gives us a link to the website, and I will put that link in the show notes. I've heard you talk many times about whether you are a get or take person. I'm definitely a get person. Boo, Justin, boo, I say. And learning all the one-letter shortcuts for commands, but I'm not sure I've heard you say whether you take the six-letter shortcut when playing Infocom games and inputting commands. I believe Infocom instructions state that the game recognizes only the first six letters of any word and ignores the rest. In most playthroughs I see, though, people still type longer words in full.
Yeah.
But there's no need to type hippopotamus. Hippo does just fine. Or if you're sick of typing read incomprehensibly long letter, you can just say read incomp letter, and that will do the trick. Looking forward to more episodes this year. Thanks again for rekindling my passion for IF. So what say you, Kay? Do you type the whole thing?
I type the whole thing unless it's a particularly hard, difficult word.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Same with me.
Yeah.
And I am aware of that thing. Like, going back to dorm, when making dorm, like, you have to be careful to not create two things that have the first six letters the same in their names, or the game will consider them the same object.
Right.
When I type stuff, I don't think to shorten it. I just type the whole thing.
No, my go-to is be like, find a synonym. You know, I would say read letter, you know, or read long letter rather than try to type incomprehensibly.
Right. Yes, exactly. Or if it's like a long book, with a title, book will work. I'm like, okay, I'll just call it book instead. I too will just find a shorter word. But I tend to type the whole thing. I do use shortcuts. Like, I'll use G for again, which was the one that it took me forever to learn for some reason.
Oh, no, I use
I'll type L. Or X. I do X instead of exam.
Yeah, I use X all the time. And G and Z for undo sometimes. If the game
and then, like,
that.
Going north, I never type go north. I'll just type N.
Right.
Because I'm like one of the cool kids who just like, I drop an N, baby.
Wow.
And I
can't say that.
Carrington. Say drop an N? Is that a word? Is that a thing?
You can't say the N word.
I'm not saying the N. Oh, jeez, dude. N for North. You monster. So that's it. I think that's it. What I got for email.
Okay. Great.
That's all. That's enough. That's so much. That's so much email.
It's a lot. A lot of email. We appreciate the email. We love it.
Great. And we abbreviate it to
Let's talk about the game we played.
We played a game described as a philosophical interactive romance novel, but the cool kids call that a dating simulator.
Called
Creatures Such as We.
Yes.
You and me, baby.
How did you play it? On what platform?
I played on the web.
Really?
Yep.
I played on my phone.
Ooh, aren't you a fancy phone player?
There was an app and it was a couple bucks.
And you don't have to type much in this. It's really just like choose your own. It's a linky thing.
Yeah, it's a linky thing.
Do you know if it's made out of something that we know? It's a twine game, right? Maybe?
It's twine.
Seemed twiny.
It wasn't that twiny. It took me about 3 hours.
Oh. Ba-dum-bum.
I don't know. That's an excellent, fair question, and
we have no idea.
Development system ChoiceScript.
Oh, ChoiceScript. Okay, so this might be our first choice TypeScript game then.
TypeScript.
And it's very much a choose-your-own-adventure style. You get a big block of text, and then there'll be like some choices are scripted for you, and you pick like here four dialogue responses or whatever, and you click on the one that you're most interested in.
Yes.
So that would work great on the phone because you're just reading, and then you don't have to type anything.
Right. Yeah, there was no type. Well, you type your name, and at one point you can type an adjective. I mean, but it was very little typing. Mm. I played through it twice, choosing first. Oh, like I told you before, the first time I played it, I was on an airplane. I was just like not really taking notes, or I was just playing, enjoying the game. And then when we were ready to record, I was just like, wait, I don't remember. I need to play the game again. So I played the game a second time, and I chose a different person for my dating sim.
Right, because you pick your person, like you describe yourself, yes. And then being a dating sim, there's like, you know, six people, and you got to pick one to romance, which I guess is I've never played a dating sim before. This is my first time playing one of those.
Yeah, me too.
And so, yeah. And you know, the idea is I watched somebody play a dating sim once.
Yeah.
But that's it. Yeah. Dodger, she played a dating sim where you're a pigeon and like in a school, and you're a pigeon and you're going to try to woo Japanese schoolboys or something. Anyway, it was fascinating. Huh. So remember that one.
Woo or coo?
Coo and woo, baby.
Yeah. There's six people to choose from. So it's in this game, you are a person, and I say person because you can choose everything mm-hmm. about this person, the name, the gender, the whatever, but you are a person who is working on
not a pigeon
on a moon base, and you are like a tour
you are a tour guide on the moon.
On the moon.
How cool is that job? My jobs are terrible compared to that job. I want to be a tour guide on the moon.
And this person doesn't really love their job, frankly.
Nope.
Which maybe you need, I don't know, maybe it says more about you than the job if you don't love your job as a moon tour guide. So yeah, their job is to the tourists come up, and you know, have to keep them fed and safe and give them on the, you know, take them on the tours and show them the moon and try not to let them get killed.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe romancing one of them and also mm-hmm. playing your favorite game, mm-hmm. Which is the game you play in the game, and that game itself is Creatures Such as We. Like, so the game you're playing is the game Creatures Such as We, and this is named after that.
There's a game within a game. And the game that the protagonist is playing seems to be some sort of story-based first-person shooter mm-hmm. sort of thing. The type of game I never play. I don't really... It's just not my thing. But it was interesting to read... I enjoyed reading about the game that I never would have played in real life. So.
Yeah, and it's interesting to read about somebody playing a first-person shooter.
Yeah.
So the thing about the game, though, the game in the game, we should get on that, because it's this is a game about consent, and it's a game about games and endings and stuff. It seems mm-hmm. to be the two big themes of this thing. And so the second of those, the endings, it's interesting because in the game that you're playing in this game, your avatar is very upset. And a lot of people seem to be upset about the ending of the game and trying to get a better ending. And like, why have a game that ends poorly or a game that you can't win? And I think I got the impression that this game we're playing, this Creature Such as We, mm-hmm. came out probably a year or two after Mass Effect 3, because that was like the time when, like, that's 2012, 13, something like that, when there was the big controversy about the ending of Mass Effect 3. And it's really felt like it was inspired by that. Like, this is kind of commenting on that and referencing that, and this idea of like, what if you put out a game and everybody hates the ending? And like, what does that mean? And are you obligated to have a better ending? Is it okay for a game to have a like intentionally bad ending, or what does it mean to have a bad ending? Or is it okay to make a game that's actually unwinnable? That sort of thing. So interesting.
I did not know that. I don't know anything about Mass Effect. So
no.
Interesting. Well, all right. So yeah. So this person, the protagonist, wants to play their game, wants to finish the game, wants to get to the good ending of the game, kind of obsessed with that. And then the group of tourists come on to the moon base are the developers.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Maybe doing research for another game, or they might be acquired. Anyway, they're so, yeah. So the protagonist is interested in finding out about the ending and about meeting the developers and all that.
Exactly. And so the game, so we can talk about the kind of the plot of the game without being too spoilery and some choices in it. And then I really want to talk about this whole, I think this game is just about consent. Like, this is a game about consent. And I found that really interesting.
Really?
Yeah. Do you not think so? I'm not going to say maybe
wrong. I wouldn't. I don't know. I'd like to hear more of what you think. I mean, maybe I agree with you. That word didn't come to mind. So
okay.
For me.
Oh, it's so funny. Like, all my notes are about that. I think this whole game is all about consent. So that's interesting because I thought, yeah, that's the only thing to talk about here. So that's what I thought it was all about. So in the game itself, I don't know, like even like all the bits of the game, there's. So let's start with this idea of a romance sim, a romance simulator.
Yeah.
So it's a weird sort of thing. Like, it's not a genre that either of us have a lot of experience with before. I've watched one person play one, and this is my first time playing one. So it's an odd thing where, like, clearly the goal of this game, or the idea of a romance simulator, is you're going to play, and the fun of it is pick one of the people and then try to romance them.
Yes.
And I found that difficult to do because I found, like, and I don't know if it's because I was so interested in the ideas of what I saw as these ideas of consent and what is consensual in the game itself, it made me really hyper aware of the fact that, like, it seems weird to just, like, impose a romance. So I'm going to pick out a person to go, you and me, baby, romance time. And it seemed like, I don't know. I don't know that I'm 100% comfortable with that.
Okay.
So all right. I think maybe I overthink romance simulators is really what's going on here.
Huh.
There's this point where you're going to sit at a table. So, like, here's one of my early points. So, like, this, you have an option of sitting at a table with these game developers you were just talking about. And there's six of them total, but there's five of them at this moment because one of them gets sick and is off another place. So they come into lunch and you're basically waiting on them. Like, you're the tour guide and you're doing stuff for them. So, but at the same time, you're given the opportunity, instead of just doing that, to sit down at the table with one of them. And this is early in the game, and it's because I guess it's supposed to be an opportunity for you to start to woo people. But there's five of them available, or five people, and they're sitting at two tables. So you've got one table of three people and one table of two people. Yeah. As a Canadian, there is no option there. I have to sit at the table with two people because it'd be rude to, like, leave the two on their own and now we're going to make a bigger group of four. I felt like there wasn't a choice here. You have to sit at the table with the two people. Would anybody choose to sit? I don't care who you want to romance. That's just rude to leave. You're ostracizing the two people. And then it comes up again as a later scene. And I think at that point, you have no choice but to sit at the table with the two people. It's the same people. And now it's like, wouldn't be fair to always sit at the table with the first group. You're showing favoritism. So I felt like a lot of times I didn't feel like there was a choice because socially it felt rude to do other things. So
interesting.
That was very, I don't want to be rude to these non-player characters.
Very Canadian response.
Yes.
Huh. No, I just sat down and talked to the person that I was trying to woo.
And so did you just pick a person and go full on, like, attacking his key?
Yeah, so I picked a different person each the two times I played. And what the first time, yes, it was full on, just like I would be in real life, like my wife would tell you I am. I'm just, like, hardcore, just like, talk, you know, just like way too intense.
Okay.
And the second time, I was a little less intense and had some conversations with other people, but still, you know, weighted toward the main person. I was a little disappointed in the two times I played that, like, what happens is pretty much the same no matter who you woo. Like, the conversations are the same largely.
Okay. You
know,
I only played one time through, so I didn't know that.
So I don't, I was hoping, maybe I just didn't notice it, but I was hoping for, like, more variability in the people. Who did you pick?
Who did I pick? Let me see. Scroll. I think it was Sadri.
That was my first time too. I picked Sadri the first time too.
Who's that? I think the programmer. So maybe I was feeling like, yeah, let's have a romance with a programmer.
Right. I did Sadri the first time. The second
I was not successful. I did not end up with Sadri.
Really?
Only I can strike out in days. It's very true to life.
No, I think I ended up with Sadri The second time, I think I was like ended up being friends with Ren. The second time I played Ren, who was like the artist, the designer person.
Yeah.
And I like the Ren character because Ren seemed like very, very like on the spectrum. Just like, okay, cool. But I think we ended up, maybe I'm reading more into it than there was there, but I think we ended up like buddies at the end, you know, not like romance.
Sure. Right. Okay. I wasn't sure if like in this game you could even end up like, because I think with the themes of the game, I wouldn't have been surprised if it is impossible to end up in a full on courtship with anybody. See, like I picked Sadri at the beginning and my notes even say I would have picked nobody. Because early on you can kind of like, there's a couple of chances at the beginning where you're going to pick a person to focus on. But I can't help putting, like, I know it's a dating sim and I know the idea is just go full press and let's try to hook up. But I in the game, I'm their tour guide and they just show up at the moon and the idea that I'm just going to like go hit on somebody seems like really inappropriate.
Right.
And so it's like, I said in real life, I would have picked the nobody I'm maintaining professional distance or at most the which nobody I'd rather get them know better.
Seems to be an option. Rude. If I were going to play through this again, which realistically I'm not, I would do that again and just like be professional the whole time, not eat lunch with anybody and just like see how, just to see how it ended, you know?
Yeah. It probably ends as I ended because I ended up with the game. When we get to the ending later, the game basically tells me, like, you think about, like, why things went so horribly wrong. And I'm like, I didn't think it did go horribly wrong. I didn't realize, but the game seemed really sure that I had absolutely fumbled the whole thing. Again, I guess, like, real life. But I was like, oh, I thought I did pretty good for me. I don't know.
You seem like in real life you're good at dating. You know how to
courtship. I love wooing. Yeah. I got my gal now, but even before that, yes, I'm hardcore into all the romantic comedy stuff. I am all romance all the time. But I don't want to be rude about it, man. You gotta like, I'm big also on consent. Big on consent. So I don't know. I think the game is about that. I think the game itself is about consent. I think if the author here should say, yep, that's what it's about. Or they're here. I don't know what pronouns are. I think there's this idea about can a character or a person in a video game actually consent? Like when you're in control of all the choices, like you can restart a game and say, nope, I'm going to keep doing this. I'll try different things. And they're just there. But of course, we're dealing with an NPC, like it's not a conscious thing, it's not an AI, so like does consent even matter? I think, and this will sound brutal because in real life I'm super into consent, I think the way I in my notes it says the can doesn't need to consent to the kick. It's like when you're kicking a can, it's a can, it's not a thing, it's not a person. Is like there are like dogs need to consent, people need to consent. One could argue a carrot needs to consent. I don't know, but there comes a point where it's like this is a digital thing. There are some rocks don't need to consent. There's some point where you're going to cut it off. And I think this game though is, I think the message the game is giving is different than that. Like it's really exploring this idea of informed consent and like in a dating sim, in a game, is it okay for something like to be not in your control, and is it okay for you to be in control? Should you be the only person in control of stuff just because you're the player? So I found those ideas really interesting. I found that every scene in this game was about that. It seemed this idea of consent in video games.
Interesting.
Am I wrong?
I don't know. I didn't get that, but that doesn't mean you're wrong. In fact, a lot of the conversations in this game was about video games in general and like what it means to play video games. And that's what I felt like it was about. There's conversations about why people play video games and who gets to decide what a game... It was literally a conversation about who gets to decide what a game is about. Is it the author of the game or is it the player of the game? And there's a whole conversation in there about fan fiction, like how valid is fan fiction versus the real thing. And you know, play a game, is your interpretation as a player, is that more or less valid than what the author of the creator of the game intended? I have a screenshot here of they're talking about why you play a game and what happens when you get to a bad ending, and is it bad to have a bad ending, or is that okay sometimes to have a game with a bad ending?
And who's allowed to make these choices?
Who's allowed to make it? Right. Yeah. So I just felt that it was more about the art of making and playing a video game. And
I think it is about that too. Yes, 100%. It specifically says, like, does the art's meaning belong to the artist or the viewer? Like, that's right. Outright.
I mean, this
game
is super meta right now, because we're talking about exactly what it was talking about.
And the answer is I get to decide. Me, Carrington. Right.
So you have these conversations with these game developers about these things, and none of that really seems to affect the as far as I could tell, the end game or who you end up with. But it's just like part of what the game is about. It's about having these conversations about games in general, while this person is frustratedly trying to come up with a good ending. And then this
they're playing, yeah.
And then this game gives you the opportunity to make the best ending that you want, which I liked.
I mean, that's true, right?
Because the protagonist doesn't like the ending of the game they're playing, and then if you don't like the game that you're playing, it lets you change it.
Right.
Which I thought was
neat. And so, did you?
Absolutely.
I didn't.
Oh, well, that's why you ended up semi-unhappy or whatever.
I guess. I don't know. So, I think we should talk about the very, very end after the spoiler fest. I want to talk about it because I was like, yeah, no, that's I'm okay with it. Like, you've beat me down with all this consent stuff. I'm afraid to make another choice.
Wow.
Like, and so I was just like, oh, yeah, no, I'll just take it. I'll just take this first ending. I'm done.
So I think that's the whole point. I thought that was the whole point. It's like,
could be. I don't know. Yeah. I find these sorts of ideas get in my head of who's in charge of a thing. Like, who gets to make a point in art? Is it the artist? Is it the reader or listener or the audience? Who the first play I ever had produced, which makes it sound like I'm a big old fancy playwright who's had more than two, and by first I mean one of two. but I've had two plays have very short runs that very few people saw, and the first one was a thing called The Sound of Two Hands Typing that got runs in Calgary and then Toronto way back in like 2099, back in the 1900s, back in 1909 or whatever. And that was about the idea of, like, okay, here's a play. It's written by me, but it's directed by somebody else. And you know, people seeing it, I've got nothing to do with this thing now. Like, who's in charge of the meaning of this play? And so the play was about that. Like, I'm interested. So for all these years, I'm still interested. Everything I do is about the thing I'm doing. Because all crappy artists, everybody writes bad books about writing bad books. That's what we do. So I don't know, I'm fascinated by these ideas. And I waffle back and forth. And a lot of times I'm like, well, who am I to say? If you want to just give me a thing, then fine. I'm going to try to let the artist say to me the thing they want to say. And so I got to the end of this play with all these ideas, or the end of this game now, with all these ideas of what's an ending and should you force other endings on things and what is consent and can people in video games consent to stuff? And then I get this ending and it says, do you want to change it? I'm like, I guess no. I don't know that I felt like I could pick a different ending. Again, it would be, I don't know, man. The game beat me. So the game won and I lost. So I took my crappy ending. So the game then said, like, oh, it's too bad things went so horribly wrong for you. I'm like, I didn't know it was so bad. So anyway, we'll talk about the ending later. But yeah, I just took the ending I was given. I was just, okay, I just meekly walked away, loser, not date anybody. I failed at the dating sim.
Pigeon without anybody to love.
I got no coup, baby. So, anyway, This is the game. The game itself, though, as much as it's about choice and can you change things, like that, all that said, and I do think that's there, the plot of the game is very much on rails, though. Like, I felt like there's this scene and this meteor is coming, and oh, you got to do this march, and somebody's good, and there's this big pit. And I'm like, someone's going to fall in the pit. And yeah. Like, even if you say, keep away from the pit, you know someone's going to fall in the stupid pit.
Right.
Of course, the person I'm dating is going to fall in the pit. Like, and it's just like a lot of the game felt railroaded, which I also felt like was on purpose, because it's commenting on, like, you as the player, do you feel a lack of consent now? Too bad. The one you're hooking up fell in the pit, because I'm going to assert some control here as the author. And like, just that dynamic was really interesting. But the game is very much on rails.
Yes, yes, very much on rails. Which,
yeah.
This is a fine game, and I would recommend it. But
I liked it a lot.
But yeah. But in general, I did not love the lack of authority that I had as a player. You know, you're basically this is, you're reading a this is fiction. This is 99% fiction with 1% interactive.
That's an interesting thing. Because like, you know, when we played the Infocom games, yeah, when this whole shebang started many years ago, like the Infocom people themselves kept harping on about how we're not making text adventures, we're making interactive fiction. But even at the time, I was like, yeah, you're making text adventures. Like, if Parser games are all text adventures. As we play these more modern games, the amount of freedom you get is really limited in these short games. It's like, mm-hmm, it's like click on these choices and they might have different endings.
Right.
But it
and sometimes
feels
even
like,
there's several choices. You click on them, there's absolutely no difference in what happens.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
Right. I mean, and then when you get differences, like that 16 ways to kill a vampire at McDonald's, mm-hmm, super fun. It's about like explore these little endings.
Yeah.
But it's not like you can go off and do something else or whatever. It does seem like it's much more, like you say, it's more fiction with a bit of interactivity now. Mm-hmm. It's the modern take versus the old ways where just like, it's an adventure game. You're going to walk around. You're going to be lost. You're going to spend 5 hours, or well, 5 days maybe thinking about a puzzle.
Yeah, and this, yeah, there was no puzzles. There's no mapping. There's no, it's just, you're reading a short story, you know.
Yeah, and very much so. This is very much a short story with choices.
Yeah.
No, which is not to knock it. I like this game a lot.
Yeah.
Did you learn any words? Did you find any errors? Did you find bugs?
No bugs. If I learned any words, I've forgotten them already. What?
I found a spelling mistake, but that's it.
Did you?
Wow. Yeah, it says eventually they three pick up their plates and deposit them politely. It should be the three pick up their plates. Mm. So that's it. I found one spelling mistake. That's the bug I found.
Nice. It was enjoyable little story. It took me about, I don't know, 3 hours each time, and absolutely nothing wrong with it.
Is there a lot, like, if you change the ending, is there a lot there? Because I think it took me way less than that, like an hour or something.
I just read slower than you do.
Or maybe I just made, like, crappy choices. Could also be just, like, I got the person to say no to me much quicker than you did.
No, once you choose different endings, it's just a couple of paragraphs each time.
Yeah. Okay.
And again, it's on rails. I mean, the different endings are just another page of text of
okay,
what could have happened, you know,
what could have been.
Yeah
Okay, so would you recommend the game? I think you said that yes, right?
Yeah, I would recommend this game.
I would as well. I think if people are interested in the kind of things we're talking about,
right,
it's not a big commitment, and I think it's well written. I really like the writing.
Mm-hmm.
I think this by somebody who really knows what they're doing. I think this is a well-made game by somebody who's got things to say, and they made it well. Like I can see why this is a highly acclaimed game. I think it's excellently
this
done.
this type of game that's mostly reading, a little bit of clicking, it is not my go-to thing for interactive fiction. But I enjoyed it nonetheless, and I would absolutely recommend it.
Yeah. I do find increasingly I'm more into the traditional parser game kind of thing, like but I do like this kind of stuff, and I think this was a really well made one. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would recommend it. Yeah. Sure.
Okay, so I want to hop over spoiler fence, talk about the end of this thing and my crappy ending. We want to talk about the music thing first?
Yeah, let's talk about that briefly.
Let's talk about the music thing.
We played it, we listened to a music thing. It was called
It
was called Memories of Infocom.
Memories of Infocom.
And it is a music CD. We bought the package of it, both of us, I know. Mm-hmm. But you could, this is also on Spotify.
Yeah, you just go on Spotify and listen. 12 songs.
You can just listen to it. But we bought it for the packaging just to get the full experience. It's by a musician named Tony Longworth. And I think it was published last year or the year before. It's been out for a bit. And it is... says music inspired by classic interactive fiction. These pieces of music will transport you to ancient empires, to crime scenes, outer space, and beyond. And there are 12 tracks, and their names are things like Zork, Deadline, Starcross, Enchanter, Infidel, Planetfall, Suspended, Cutthroats, A Month for Voyaging, Ballyhoo, Hollywood Hijinks, and A Lurking Horror. So
yes.
And what did you think of that? So first of all, let's talk about the packaging first. Let's just...
Yes, okay.
Because the packaging... First of all, Tony Longworth did not cheap out, and he actually did a box, Carrington, unlike you. And
what can I say? Tony loves you more than I do.
So it comes in an Infocom-style box, and in the box, there's some feelies and some stickers and stuff. The music came in three versions, on CD-ROM, on... SD card, the tiny SD card, and on cassette.
Yes.
Which I love.
Cassette's best.
And
do I have no way to play a cassette?
No. Oh, I have a cassette player right here. Although I did not listen on cassette.
I can spin it on a pen.
Sure.
One does.
So how did you listen?
On Spotify.
Wait, so you spent €29 for the box, and then you
listened
to it on...
But that's the packaging stuff, and then, like, just to listen, it's much easier to just be in the car and go,
sure.
Like,
okay, yeah,
play it on Spotify. It's the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you think of the music?
I'm glad I listened to it once. I don't want to be... I'm glad I listened to it once. I don't think I'll be listening to it again.
I didn't listen to all of it.
Really?
Yeah, I got about halfway through. I listened to the first part of a song, and then I would just skip to the next one.
I did that a little bit. I tried to listen to as much as possible. I found many of the songs very repetitive. They would like come up with a theme, and then there was like very little variation of a theme. It was just...
It's all instrumentals. We haven't mentioned that yet.
Oh, right.
It's
synth
sort of instrumentals. No lyrics, whatever, that I heard anyway.
Right. No, there was no lyrics.
When I listened to it, what I did was, though, I put it on, I downloaded all the songs. So rather than listen in order, I put them all in a Spotify playlist that I randomized. Then I listened in the car, mm-hmm. and I tried to imagine each time, what is this game?
That is smart.
And I got zero of them right.
Really?
Not
I
one.
I am really surprised. Because
really? Really? Because I don't think any so of them.
For some of them... Absolutely, I like there was one that was like scary movie ambiance, and ended up being the Lurking Horror, but it could have.
But the scariest one to me was the one that was the Deadline one, and uh-huh. I was like, oh, this must be Lurking Horror. Mm. Nope, it's the Deadline was Jaunty. What was this? Starcross was the scary one,
right? The Infidel one.
Is totally, the most appropriate one. I thought the Infidel
totally
was the one.
Evokes that, like Cairo.
That might be the one. You know what? I think I did get Infidel, but I had narrowed it down by then that I was like, there's only so many left.
Yeah.
But Ballyhoo?
No.
You think it would evoke circus music? It doesn't at all. It's like this person has never played Ballyhoo.
Right.
There's not a Cutthroats? It wasn't even no, remotely
right, like my only note for that was did not seem cutthroaty.
Yeah. Needs more dude bro.
Right.
So I don't know. The Deadline one was kind of jaunty, bouncy, and just like not noirish. Like I thought none of them seemed... I love the packaging, and it felt like the had the 12 songs and then just put Infocom names on them. And mm-hmm. they weren't actually based on games that they played. I don't think it is successful as evocative.
Right. I think it was...
Oh, I feel guilty saying that.
No, I don't disagree with you. I feel like a lot of them are neat little mood pieces, little ambient setups for games, and I thought many of them fit with the game that he was trying to do. Even if you couldn't tell, you could listen to the Enchanter one and like, yeah, there's like, it's kind of magical, sure, but so I could see...
Hmm.
But I'm not going to listen to any of them again. And I found...
Here's the thing. Do you like this kind of thing? Do you listen to like soundtracks of movies? Not the when it's like popular songs, but just like instrumental movie soundtracks.
I do not.
I don't at all. So I think I'm also not the target audience for this. Mm. I have a lot of friends who love movie soundtracks. They collect them. They listen to them. They can hear a bit of one and go, oh, that's from this. I'm like, really? It doesn't do it for me at all. So I think maybe that's a problem here because these are essentially soundtracks.
Yeah.
And I don't like that kind of thing. But so maybe somebody who does, like kind of, if a listener loves movie soundtracks, they might get a lot more out of this than I do.
That'd be interesting to,
I need lyrics or anger. One of those two things in my music.
Interesting soundscapes.
The songs are relatively short. If they're supposed to be a song you'd listen to during Zork, like on repeat, say.
Right.
It's not enough. Like you got it. I mean, how could you have enough? You'd have to have 17 weeks worth of music.
Right. Yeah. So, I'm glad I listened to it. And sorry, Tony. It wasn't my thing.
I would still recommend people check it out, though. Because, again, if you like soundtracks or it's like... you could get something out of it that I didn't.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that this is bad music because I don't think I'm a judge of stuff. And if people saw the kind of stuff I listened to, they'd be like, well, you aren't. Like, oh my gosh. I am not known for my musical taste. So I don't know.
Fair enough. Okay. Should we do the spoiler fence?
Let's leap. Four creatures? Let's leap across the spoiler balustrade. Are we leaping? Are you leaping? I'm leaping. I'll talk about our leap. Here we leap. So we are going to do the second part of the show where we are going to talk about the game Creatures Such As We in more detail, spoil my terrible ending that I just accepted like the meek sheep I am. But if you want to play the game, it's usually best to stop listening now. The podcast will always be here. You can always come back after you've played the game and then get an idea of like some specific puzzles. We'll probably... there's not really puzzles in this game, but we're going to talk about details that would spoil it for you if you haven't read the story yet. So it takes very little time, somewhere between 1 and 3 hours. Go play the game. It's worth it. I liked it. And then you can come back and hear our endings, how Kay won the game and romanced the people and how I am alone and sad.
Wow.
In real life, I'm not alone and sad. In real life, I'm quite happy and I have romance. It's awesome. But this game was high school flashbacks all over.
So the ending thing. What?
Okay, so let's talk about this. So the meteor comes, crashes into stuff, or is going to crash into stuff, and they're like, oh no, we've got to get everybody out and go walk to this other place. So okay, that's it's a MacGuffin. So you go walking and then you come across this giant crater and you just know someone's falling in the crater and it's going to be the person you're wooing. And so you tell them, don't go near the crater, and then the idiot you're wooing is just like, whoa, over I go.
Whoa.
And I just do it because Sadri went down. I'm like, this is not a coincidence. Yeah. It's not like the person I'm not wooing. I was like, too bad for you, Bob. Sadri and I are going on. So they fall in the crater again. So what happened for me, and presumably for everybody, is I'm going to get in trouble because of this. This happened. And then Sadri volunteers to say, no, it was they insisted that their insistence on doing this is what caused this issue and basically saved my job. And I let her do it. I'm like, well, okay. It's like, if you're willing to do that, they're not going to get in trouble for it and it saves me. So thanks. So I just let them say that they insisted so I don't get in trouble. Mm-hmm. But then it says, as they latch on a fresh oxygen tank, you contemplate what you did wrong, how it all went so badly. It did? What? So then I picked, I can't beat myself up over it. It wasn't preventable. Because I thought it wasn't preventable. I don't think I did that badly. I thought I didn't really have a lot of agency. It's the game's doing this. And then it says, so I say it was preventable. So like, but of course it wasn't. You screwed up so bad that they thought it made sense to pin their problems on you and be done with it. The local stewards finished suiting you up. You screw on the helmet and make the long trip back in silence. The whole way back, you contemplate on your massive failure.
No, that's like, how the game goes. You didn't fail. That's how the game goes. That it's like, okay. It's very much on rails, and that's how it is. There was another part see if I can remember right now, that I liked where something is going wrong and the choices are like I can do this, I've trained for this, I'm a professional, and I don't think I can do this.
Right.
And I chose, like, I'm a professional.
Right. And I chose all the good ones first. And right. It's like, no.
And it makes you, it just keeps looping until you choose as one of the self-doubt ones. Like, I'm not a professional. Right. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. I was like, but again, this is this idea of consent. The game starts taking away consent from you. Mm-hmm. Like, it starts taking, first it takes away from the NPCs in the game, but then it's taking away consent as the game goes on. It's right. increasingly on rails. It's saying, nope, you can't do this. And it's forcing that failure that it talks about at the beginning of the game. Like, is it okay for a game to end in failure?
So that's the thing I think you missed, is the game for you ended in failure, as it does. It ends in failure. You're lonely and sad. You are still doing this job you hate. I don't remember if you get fired or not, but I mean, it's
I did not get fired. Okay, I'm stuck on the moon doing my job. I got a moon job.
You got your moon job, but your friend is left and you're lonely and you don't love this job. And then you can change the ending, which is the whole point of the creature such as we in the game. You don't like the ending, you could change the ending. And so the options were like, you could get your terrible boss fired, and I chose that.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And you get the terrible management person, she gets fired, and then you can also, if you want to, quit your job.
I didn't do anything.
And there's another one is you can go back to Earth, which you kind of get for free when you quit your job. You don't have to, I think, do both.
Right. Okay.
And then once you, and there was another one, or maybe that combination, you ended up like with your friend, your person you're trying to woo, you know, together on
Earth. So I think that's all terrible. Because like the
sad ending? Point, the whole point of the game is, if you don't like an ending of a game, you should be able to get a happy ending, because what's the point of a game? Why would you want a sad ending?
Well, but see, that's the thing. Like, why does everything in art have to have a happy ending? Why can't it be unwinnable? Some of the most beautiful movies are sad movies where people don't end up together. Like, it's just like, that's just sometimes how it is. It can be cathartic. It can be good for us to experience that. The same reason, like, you watch a horror movie because it's good to be scared and come through it. You watch sad movies because it's good to have a cry and come through it. Like, it shouldn't be just like, nope, I'm a millennial and I get to change the ending.
From the game.
Kids today and their
from
games.
The game. You press it home. We're playing a game to get out of reality, to travel to a place where we're in control. Bad endings remind us what life is really like. Sadri nods. Yeah, that's totally it. Diana waves about. Ah, but who's to say that we don't need that reminder?
So okay, so that's the game agreeing with me. Bad endings, like what the heck, man? What's with the whole no, I'm gonna refuse and just impose my happy ending on it? It says for me, it's refreshing actually that you're willing to accept the ending as it was. I personally think that it's okay for some things to stay unresolved, and that it's okay for some things to come out a bit messy, to think about how things could have gone better while accepting things as they are. I'm glad that you agree. Thank you so much for understanding, and thank you so much for playing.
Oh, that's nice. I didn't get that ending because I kept changing the ending, so. So the author thanked you for taking
for understanding the freaking game. in
nice, I like that.
In that play that I wrote, The Sound of Two Hands Typing. I said I've got two plays. It was actually the second one I had produced, not the first one. So I was out in Calgary watching it. My friend Dawn was in it. That's why I flew out there to watch him in the play. I'm like, watch her in the play. I'm like, come on, let me go see you be in my play. Say my words. It's going to be awesome. So I sit down, I watch it, and I'm loving it. And it's a comedy, and everybody's laughing. The audience is really into it. I'm just feeling so good about myself. Oh, look at me, big fancy playwright, and everyone loves my words. Isn't this awesome? I can write comedy. And the play is about this sort of idea, like who's in charge of a message? Is it the audience? Is it the actors? Is it the author? Who's the person who's most in charge? And with my ego at the time, there's a character in the play who's an actress in the play. And then the author himself goes into the play, is like upset with what's happening and gets involved and moves things around, and then they start to ad lib and he's all upset about that. And in the end, the author and the actress kind of come together and accept that the audience kind of has the most say about it. But then they, as they leave, they go out through the door that the author came in, because they're basically going back out into the world, and I'm giving a little nod to myself and my control. And when I'm watching the play, it was almost like exactly stage, like everything as I wrote, but the author and the actress, when they exit the stage into the door that the actress comes in. And I want to stand up and shout, "You don't understand my play." That is a fundamental difference. I hate this change. I was railing against it. And all the, like, literally they didn't change a comma for the whole play, but had two people exit through a different door than I had intended. And I was like, my friend Colin had flown up with me to see the play, and I turned to him and said, "I'm never writing another play. I want to make a movie instead, because I want to direct." And that's why we made the film Duck Duck Goose, because I was like, that's it. Other people can't touch my words anymore. I have to be in control. I'm such a child. And I think since then I've grown to mature, where I can accept other people's endings. And what I'm saying, Kay, is I'm more mature than you, and that's why I got the correct ending in this game.
I see. All right. Well, my character ended up happy, so...
my character ended up alone on the moon. But I'm on the moon, man. My moon job didn't seem that bad to me.
Yeah.
My avatar kept complaining about the terrible moon job, but it seemed pretty cool. I'm on the moon.
Yeah, you're on the moon.
Did you learn any words in the game?
No.
Nope? Not even phlebotomist? I thought for sure you would know
phlebotomist. Peace used to be a phlebotomist. So.
Really?
Yes. When we lived in California, she worked at a hospital for several years and was a phlebotomist.
Well, that's remarkable.
Yes.
I knew the word too, but I try to guess the words you were going to say that you learned.
We drew, when we got married, we drew each other's blood for the blood test.
Oh, nice.
Because she was a phlebotomist and she could draw blood. And
you were just really into it.
And she just taught me how to do it, and I ended up drawing the blood out of her hand, actually. She has the veins in her arms weren't cooperating for me, a newbie, and I did a...
And you repeatedly stabbed her. Mary, you stabbed you.
So, yes, I did not learn the word phlebotomist, at least not now.
And I was upset with the word Zorobras. So there's this...
I didn't know if that was a thing they made up, or that was...
They made that, and I think... Made up and spelled wrong. It's a new word that was made up, and I think they spelled it. I think the author spelled it wrong. Because it's this idea, this great idea of multiple zombies grafted together. Mm-hmm. So it's an Ouroboros of zombies. So it should be a Zoroboros. Mm-hmm. But they spell it Zorobras. They're missing an O.
Mm.
And so it bothered me, the missing O.
I see. No, I did not know the word.
I love the idea.
Ouroboros. And I did not know the word Zoroboros. I did not know that one, but I thought it might have just been made up. So
yeah, but I like the idea of the multiple zombie grafted thing. The game in the game is pretty cool.
I'd play that. I mean, I wouldn't, but I'd watch it play.
but you'd read about other people playing it.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Got anything else?
No.
Do you accept that this is the ending? Should we just
accept that? No, let's make a better ending.
Change it. I consent. I don't like to this being the end.
I want a better one.
Okay, well, this is what you get. So this has been Eaten by a Gru, an interactive fiction.
We have to pick our next game.
Oh, we got to pick a game.
We're supposed
to pick that before the spoiler fence.
Oh, well.
People will figure it out.
Yeah,
we had all that talk of our randomizer.
Right.
Randomizer.
Do you want to use the randomizer?
Yeah.
Do you?
No, I want you to pick a game that you're really in the mood for.
Okay, so I was going to offer you the choice of the randomizer or something else. Our buddy Mark, our good friend Mark Pilgrim, has been asking us to play a game for a long time.
And
I think we should just play it.
Sure, I consent.
Okay, all right. That game is called Counterfeit Monkey.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about it.
I know that it's a game in which you change things, I think.
Right. Like, it's something to do with words. It's something
word
like
play or change things.
Something like the R. What was that? The game in you take a letter off of
Which one was that?
The R remover. You turn the rabbi into a rabbit, and it was in
Nordenbert?
No, it wasn't in Nordenbert. It was in the saucy one. The
smellorama of ladies of Planettown.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep.
If I make
the smellorama ladies game, of Planettown,
I'm gonna call it smellorama ladies of Planettown.
Leather goddesses of Phobos.
Mine's yes, better.
But that should have been a Nordenbert. I mean, it felt like a Nordenbert game. But yeah, so that you're right. That he did mention, or somebody mentioned along the way that anyway. So Counterfeit Monkey is an espionage game by Emily Short. Came out in
Emily Short. Yeah, I'm a fan.
Came out in 2012. Have we played Emily Short games?
Yeah, I think we've only played Emily Short games.
Oh, okay, cool. And, you know, I'm not even going to read about it. I want to be surprised. I know it's done in Form 7. Forgiveness rating is tough. I'm going to download this and have us so I can use it on the airplane on my way to Florida. Friggin' Florida, man.
Friggin' Florida, man. Speaking of places with no consent.
Downloading the G-Blorb. Yeah, they don't believe in consent in Florida.
The G-Blorb?
Downloading the G-Blorb. And apparently I have Spatterlight installed. I clicked the G-Blorb and Spatterlight came up. So apparently that's how I'm going to play it.
Nice. So, I like it.
Yeah. So you okay with that? Counterfeit Monkey?
I'm okay with it. Yeah.
Okay. And if we hate this, we can blame Mark.
Yeah, exactly. Hear that, Mark? Blaming you. Okay, are we done now?
This
ending?
Yeah.
Okay. You've now made a good enough ending. So this has been Eaten by a Gru, the interactive fiction podcast. If you want, you can send us email, gru@monsterfeet.com, or you can reach out on Mastodon, where we're both on the oldbytes.space instance. He is savitz@oldbytes.space. I am carrington@oldbytes.space. Want other people to find the podcast? We'd appreciate it if you gave us a nice review on iTunes, or just tell people about our podcast.
Scream into
the void. Sound your barbaric yawp, baby. The show notes and such can be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks to MC Frontalot for letting us use his song as our theme tune. I would romance him in a stimulator. I mean, a stimulator.
Whoa.
Hey, now.
Talk about consent.
He seems like a pretty nice guy. I don't know. So I romance him with one. You know what I'm trying to say. Anyway, next up is Counterfeit Monkey and the Smellorama Ladies of Planettown. Thank you for podcasting.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Karen.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Oh no! You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
Speaking of yelling into the void. One of the events on the Joko cruise is I think it happens 3 or 4 nights. It's scream at the moon, and it's
really?
Like
okay.
It's at midnight, and you just go out onto the deck and you
and
scream
everyone just
at the
screams.
Moon.
Yeah. Okay, sure.
So yeah, yelling into.
I
the
first
void.
Heard about the cruise from not personally, but Will Wheaton.
Will, yes.
Will.
Will. He will be on the cruise. Will. Wheaton.
He will.
Wheaton. Yep.
And I think lots of bands play, right? It's like a nerdy band sing-along type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jonathan Colton, presumably.
Yeah, Jonathan Colton and friends, other nerdy people. Various nerd levels. This year there are many bands. I don't know who they are yet, and I will find out. I will go to the concerts.
Cool.
And yeah, no, I'm absolutely not cool enough. Mm. But, you know, you go to call the concert, and there's, you know, 3 or 4 different people play, and you find out what it's all about. So some of them I have heard of and some of them I have not. So that would be
the whole thing sounds appealing to me. I have wanted to go, even
except
though
for COVID.
Well, except for COVID. And also cruises don't appeal to me.
Yeah.
Like the idea of being on a cruise doesn't appeal
this,
to me.
This is not, you're not going about the cruise. People have asked me like, you know, where is it stopping? Where are the destinations? Like, well, I have no idea. It doesn't matter. It's not about that, you know?
Right.
You said you were going to go this year. You promised me, but then you decided to not because of COVID. But
there's a lot of COVID, Florida. Like I'm not flying down there. They don't get my money. No, I'm not. We still have COVID here in Canada, so I'll miss you when you're dead.
Well, they've. Yeah. Who are you going to podcast with when I'm dead?
I'm going to use that voice thing to pretend it's you,
I love that.
Dude. You are now fully expendable. Don't take your cruise. Come back. Don't come back. Makes no difference to this show.
Beautiful. Great. Love that for me.